Hello and welcome to the Glenkens Oral History Project. I'm here in Davy Patterson's lovely front room with his dear wife Sue. Thank you so much for having me here, Davy and Sue. It's lovely to be with you. And we're actually in New Galloway, and it's the 5th of December 2026. And Davy is going to tell us all about his idyllic boyhood memories and childhood here in the Glenkens. And we're going to start off, first of all, Davy, to find out how it was you actually came to be here in this wonderful part of our world.
Well, my family moved down, they relocated from Ayrshire back in the 1800s. And as far as I know, they settled around Corsook and they were into farming. And then they got the chance to farm the Cubbocks farm just opposite the Kenbridge.
Uh-huh.
And so they successfully farmed there for many a year, brought up a very large family, and eventually my great-great-grandfather passed away, and eventually the family decided that they were going to split up and they were all going to move on to other things. They moved across to Australia. My namesake, David Patterson, died fighting the Turks. He was a piper who walked into the face of the battle unarmed, just with his pipes. And that was a very short-term career.
The true spirit of the Glenkens.
But I've got the dead man's penny, which has got my name in it, and for my whole life, I, from the tiniest wee boy, I've actually sat and looked at this this piece of World War One memorabilia.
My goodness. So tell me about the dead man's penny, Davy.
Well, basically, it is something that was provided by the Commonwealth for the men who fell in battle.
Okay.
And it was a commemorative piece which was provided for those men as a, you know, just to give the families something back, because the bodies weren't coming back from overseas.
Of course.
So you were actually given a keepsake. It was only when I grew up into my teens that I actually suddenly realised what this was.
The significance,
And it was basically my my great uncle who had gone off and settled in Australia. And he had written back letters. He had a romance with an Australian lassie, and then very quickly after he'd gone out there and started a career as a butcher across there, he was signed up for the Anzacs, or however they were called at that time, and I think he went off to Gallipoli, and that was the end of him. But he was a fine piper, and we've got wonderful photographs of him playing the pipes and in his kilt and his regalia and things
how
like
wonderful.
That.
And did he learn the pipes here, do you think, in the
He learned the pipes here. He was a piper. In the house when I was a wee boy, there was never the pipes, but there was always fiddles. They were, by that time, they were never used by my generation or the generation prior. But there was the family piano, which actually sat in the corner of this room that
really?
We're in.
Really? Oh, I wonder.
And there used to be parties when I was a wee boy, and there was a group of people, friends, in the village from my parents, and they used to come in and colonise this room, and the piano would be utilised, and folk would have a right old sing song and a laugh and things like that.
Oh, how wonderful.
So that was good.
So how old were you when you came to, so did you come down from Ayrshire then?
Well, I was actually born here, as was my brother, and my father was born here. So the relations came down from Ayrshire, moved to Corsook, down into the Cubbocks at the Ken Bridge.
Yes.
And then in the early years of the last century, in the early 1900s, my grandfather bought a butchery business, and all the buildings pertaining to it, plus this house we're in.
Mm-hmm.
If you can understand that, he bought the butcher's business, which also had extended shops beside it, and I think you could have up to about four shops. And that's the building opposite the Cross Keys.
Mm-hmm.
And I was brought up for the first two or 3 years of my life actually living in the flat above the shop.
Right.
My father had been born in the room that we now sleep in up the stairs in this house.
Wonderful.
But he eventually moved down. My grandmother was infirm and needed full-time care. There was a wholesale change, and my aunt and my grandmother from Ayrshire moved down and moved into the apartment above the shops on the main street, and we moved down here.
Mm-hmm.
But the earliest memories I've got of the apartment above the butcher shop was twofold, really. One was the freedom that we had, even as a 2 year old, to be sent across to Mrs. Kay's shop. Now, Mrs. Kay was the most wonderful woman. She had a posh accent, and she had a local accent. And if anybody came in the shop that she didn't know, then she spoke like Cynthia Bouquet. And she would talk like this to them. And as soon as they were away, she went straight back into the local accent. But my mother would send me across to the shop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you would think, you know, the main street these days, cars going up and down. But of course, there were very, very few cars in those days.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking 65 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she would actually stand at the window overlooking the shop, and she would send me down there, and I would run across to the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And the phrase that was always used was, you ran across from the side of your foot.
Oh.
So the side of your foot meant that you actually went with alacrity, you picked up whatever was needed.
Brilliant.
And then straight back up.
Brilliant.
There was no messing about.
No.
And so I would be sent down for whatever was needed.
Mm-hmm.
And then to bring it back up.
How wonderful. And what sort of things did Mrs. Lay sell in her shop?
Mrs. Kay.
Oh, Mrs.
was
Kay.
If I try to explain that, it was almost like a miniature Harrods. You could get everything and anything. And because of the big estates and all the people who actually populated this area, who were quite well off at the time,
mm-hmm.
she always kept things that they wanted, but she also catered for the herds, and she catered for anybody who needed something.
Mm-hmm.
So when you went into the shop, on the left hand side of the shop was the chemist,
mm-hmm.
and it was the newsagent, and it was everything to do with that. So everything and anything you could buy, from Jap salts through to headache tablets, through to toothpaste, through
mm-hmm.
to anything you wanted. But also they actually did a massive array of magazines and newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And opposite that, on the right hand side, was the actual sales counter, and sacks of potatoes, and all the vegetables. And so you actually helped yourself to everything and anything. There was paper bags, and you would help yourself to all the tatties or that, and then put it there, and it would get weighed for you. But the shelves, an amazing array of stuff. And so I know for a fact that one of the rich folk had asked for escargot.
Oh.
Because there were tins of snails.
Goodness.
On the shelf. But there was also chewing tobacco,
mm-hmm.
because one of the herds had asked for chewing tobacco. And there, it was licensed, so there was all the drink you could ever
mm-hmm.
want there. But she had this massive, great slicer for hams
mm-hmm.
and cold meats.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a cold meat counter as you walked in the door facing you. And you had the most beautiful hams. But you also had a coffee horn.
Yes.
And the coffee beans sitting in this great big glass horn.
Mm-hmm.
And you would go in and ask for a quarter of coffee
mm-hmm.
or half of coffee. And she would take out the appropriate thick, you know, sort of
mm-hmm.
pocket, it would go underneath the nozzle, and then they would grind the coffee in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And we would bring it back down to the house, and it would be, we had an electric percolator,
mm.
which was like a big fancy kettle, but it had a glass knob on the top, and you could actually watch the water percolating and turning brown in front of you.
How wonderful.
Until you knew that it was ready.
Oh.
So I absolutely love coffee, and that is where my love of coffee came from, because
mm-hmm.
from being a very small
boy
I was always allowed to have this most beautiful coffee.
Oh, gosh, well, I can almost smell it, David. I can see the ham and smell the coffee.
It was the most absolutely joyful thing.
Yes, and from snails to chewing cup tobacco. I mean, what a lady Mrs. Kay was. And was that the general... I'm sure it was a general spirit that there was much more community-based. I understand there were many, many shops here, and really you didn't have to leave... leave New Galloway.
No, there was the butcher shop, there was there was a fancy goods shop,
mm-hmm.
there was a milliner's, there was a plumber's,
mm-hmm.
There was a couple of joiners. One of my relations was a general builder,
mm-hmm.
And I think had something to do with building part of the what's called the English Kirk,
mm-hmm.
St. Margaret's, up the top there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he did. I just remember somebody mentioning it. But wherever you went, there were the most wonderful wee shops. And I can't remember Mrs. McJanet's sweetie shop, but evidently the most wonderful sweet shop.
Oh, goodness.
My brother was... always, he was such a souk. He was the favourite of so many people, and he was the only one, evidently, that Mrs. McJanet would allow to come in and sit through the back of the shop, and he would get a sweetie and a wee glass of lemonade and things like that.
He was quality control.
And
we've
still got a Mrs. McJanet's lemonade bottle somewhere, although
mm-hmm.
unfortunately we kind of put our hand in it just now. And one of the relations of the McJanets contacted us a while ago, we explained this to him, and it was posted on Memories of the Glen Kens
mm-hmm.
recently,
mm-hmm.
and two or three people came forward to say that they had bottles as well.
How wonderful.
So this
mm-hmm.
man has now got at least one bottle from his relations, and I just think it's absolutely wonderful. That modern communication has allowed
absolutely.
Somebody to actually reconnect.
Connect
with
their past.
Mrs. Kay's shop, solicitor and estate agents is almost next door to it, was a shop that was Willie John Milligan's.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lovely wee... sweetie shop, lemonade shop, ice cream shop, and sold eggs and everything else, and just a general grocer's. but they also tried their hand at a tea room, which was kind of scary because the tea room was up a tiny wee set of stairs, and it was precarious to actually go up, just walking up the stairs, let alone for somebody trying to carry up sandwiches and teas and coffees and things like that. And then they had a fish and chip shop and did fish and chips for a few years and tried that out. Yeah, it was absolutely lovely.
How lovely. And wait, were you and you went to school here as well, Davy? You did you the cat what is now the Cat Strand, was that your
I went
school?
to the Cat Strand for I think the first year and possibly a half. And then we were suddenly marched up to this brand new school one day,
Oh,
and
at Dalry?
no,
No.
the school up at the top of
Oh,
New
the
Gallery.
oh gosh, yes, the
So
new primary, yes.
we had the Cat Strand as the first school,
Yes.
and it was very basic. It was very rough. If I remember correctly, they were, sort of the very sort of Protestant puritanical thing. They had high windows, so you couldn't even look at the windows and things like that,
Oh
you
no,
know.
dreadful.
So it was an absolute novelty to go up to this beautiful new school and have
Yes.
panoramic windows and things like that.
Absolutely,
You know,
absolutely.
you were allowed to look out. And the over riding memory of the old original school was the outside toilets, which were they had a smell of it was completely unique, and it has never ever left me. You know, it
No,
was
that.
an absolute shocker of a place, but so it was rather nice to move up to this.
To this
This new
new
school, even though it
school.
was further away,
Yes.
and I used to go home for lunch the majority of the time, so I would run down the road and come down, and my mother would have something ready for me, and I'd have something, and then go straight back
How
up.
wonderful. And what was a favorite tea, do you think, of those times, a favorite thing to be eating, and or is it similar to these days, or is it, do you
For me personally, what you've got to understand is that we had an amazing situation going on. My grandfather bought the butcher shop, but this house was, I think, part and parcel of that. So he bought quite a few of my relations moved. From the Cubbocks. Some went to Australia, New Zealand, Canada, but my immediate family and other relations moved into the village, and they all bought houses. So there was a whole-scale invasion of Pattersons and Johnsons into the village. And they did various other things, you know, sort of. But my grandfather went from farming to butchery, as did my namesake, who moved to Australia, David. And they bought the butcher shop plus all the other shops, plus the apartment above, which my father and mother moved into, as married quarters, if you like. And my grandfather and grandmother stayed down here in Beach Cottage, and it had the abattoir. We've now converted a barn, a stable, a byre, and a pigsty into what's now our holiday house.
Oh, yes, it's very
Next
attractive
door,
looking.
but when I was a wee boy, they were all my play area, and believe it or not, when I was a tiny child, I was actually down It was in the yard when they were actually killing and butchering animals and things like
Goodness.
that. It was a
Yes,
very
it was.
very normal thing.
Yes, yes.
And from an early age, I was going, we had a farm up the top of the village as well, which we still got the land for, although the farmhouse was sold off. And we used to walk over the land. So by the age of 11 or 12, I was actually going across the land with a shotgun and shooting pheasants and rabbit, and bringing them back for the pot.
My goodness. I think many a modern day boy would be envious of that now.
I mean,
very
different
childhood.
It's absolutely incredible that to think that, you know, probably completely illegally, but I mean, from the age of, say, 13, 14, I was walking up the Westport with a shotgun and a belt full of cartridges and going up onto the land up at the top there and seeing if I could bag a couple of pheasants or a rabbit or two and bringing
the
them back.
Yes, for mum, for the pot.
And,
you couldn't get fresher, could you?
No.
More healthy.
No, no. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. But to actually complete the picture of the food question, so we had a complete, absolute access to any sort of meat that we ever wanted. My father made haggis, black pudding, various other puddings, sausages, and he also had pickling casks down in the bottom of the butcher's. And so they would use saltpeter brine.
Right.
And so they were actually putting gammons in there, putting pork legs and things in. And we were making potted meat.
Yes.
And I was there picking the meat off the heads and things like that that had been boiled up. So we had all this, and we were very, very practical and pragmatic. So unless my mother decided something specific, she would phone up the butcher shop, phone up my father, and there was a connecting line, so she would just press the button on the phone here, and it would go up to the butcher's. And she would say to my father, you know, what's needing used up? So, I mean, it could be mince, it could be lamb, it could be anything that was there and had been sitting there. So one day we would be having pig strotters, or we could be having tripe, and the next day we would be having fillet steak, or you know, the most finest, beautiful pork chops, and it really, we never, ever, ever went short of anything.
No,
you know, it was always okay.
It, yeah.
There you go, this is what's needing used up, and it was the most wonderful way of doing things. But my father was also a great gardener, and we've now divided up the garden here because we wanted to take part of it for Rowan Cottage.
Yes.
But it was a big garden, and it was basically a gardener's dream. It was a beautiful big allotment.
Wonderful.
And there were quince, pear, plum, cherry, crab apple. There was raspberry, strawberry, there were peas, beans, there were onion. If you could think of it, there was grapes in what was called the middle greenhouse. Went from being the pigsty to being a greenhouse to eventually being the boiler room for Rowan Cottage.
Oh, goodness.
He also had two large greenhouses further down the garden, and he grew the most beautiful tomatoes and cucumbers, and eventually capsicum when they became popular in the 70s, and he started to grow them. So, you literally had a situation where the meat coming down from the butcher shop, and you
Yeah.
went down and you chose
Just,
whatever you wanted
oh,
from the garden.
goodness,
So you would
idyllic.
pull some carrots up, you would actually pull shoitakes up. You would go down and you would have fresh fruit for your sort of the snacks or sweet and things like that. My mother was a great baker, and so she would cook up the apples or the plums and things like that, and you would come in, and she was one of these people who actually I think it's safe to say that her food was one of the things that she actually provided. It was an act of love, and she knew that as we boys we would be hungry coming in from the school, so she always accidentally started cooking and baking just before we arrived, and so there would be covering great big mounds of Scotch pancakes,
Goodness.
and tatty scones, and the tatty scones would still be warm. You would have them with a bit of cheese, or you would have them with some strawberry jam, the homemade strawberry jam,
Absolutely, yes.
homemade crab apple jam, things like that.
Oh, gosh.
And of course, you know, sort of there was a few other wee boys who actually liked to come in just around that
I'm
time as
sure.
well, you
Tea
know,
time. Oh, my goodness.
and enjoy. But aye, that was the way of it.
And
So
oh, Davian, did you? We could finish off perhaps with maybe. I've got an imagination going here of all you boys going off down to the river and getting up, building dens. And what did you do as in your playtime?
we actually loved building dens and tree houses, and there was a big old evergreen, which is now there's just the stump of it left in what is now Rowan Garden, and the branches, the actual upright branches in the centre of it were dying off, so we cut them level and we made a platform, and then we built a den, and you couldn't see it unless you were actually
Perfect.
standing underneath it.
Yes.
But we also, there were three of us who loved to play in the burn, and from a very early age, we used to girdle trout in the burn, and we used to walk up and down the burn with buckets and underneath the rocks and pulling out all these beautiful trout and things
Oh,
like that.
gosh.
And keeping them, and just then we'd release them. You know, we just used
Yes.
to have competitions and find
Who
out.
could guddle the biggest?
But we also, because we had both sides of the ground here, we could build dams. It was in the days before SEPA would frown upon such things. So we actually had the most amazing dam down on the burn, just at the bottom of the garden, and it was about 5.5 feet deep for the first part, and it came all the way up to beyond our ground here, and we have got cine camera film of myself and John McCubbin having wheelbarrow races up and down the burn,
How wonderful.
and having a grand old time. So it was an idyllic wee place. There was otter in the burn, there was lots and lots of trout, there was sticklebacks,
Gosh,
there
how
was
wonderful.
everything there, and this dam was the most amazing structure. It was an earthworks dam. It wasn't just a few wee bits of bobs of
It
stone and
was
things like that. It was
serious.
a serious bit, and sluice gates and everything like that.
Oh, how wonderful.
And we too, we were always desperate to try and impress the innocent visitors to the village, So we did two things to impress. One was more dramatic. Because there was a Y shape to the track that leads down to the bun, we used to organise crashes, and one of us was set off with one side of the Y and the other was set off for the other side, and we would meet in the middle just as visitors were walking by, and we'd do these spectacular rolls down the track and down the trail and things.
And would you be on foot, or would you have
go-karts? We were on our wee bogey.
and your bikes and
go-karts and things like that, you know.
On wheels.
We were on wheels, and we would smash into each other, and we never hurt each other, but we had a grand old time, you know, and it used to completely bemuse the innocent visitors. But we decided that there was money to be made out of them.
Ah.
So we named the dam Parren Dam, and that was Patterson, Warren and McCubbin.
Brilliant.
The three main characters. And we made these wee fishing permits, and we went up and down the burn getting the biggest trout we could possibly get. I think the biggest one was probably about sort of 6-7 inches. They were just lovely wee bun trout. But there was a lot of them in, and they were quite happy to be in this big deep pool.
Right,
was,
yes, absolutely.
You know, you would go down there and you would see them moving about, so people knew they were there. So we decided we were going to sell permits to fish. So we had three or four wee fishing rods, and we had dishes full of worms and things like that, and wee hooks and wee stuff and set up. And we would sell the permits up at the top.
Up at the top.
We had a wee seat and a wee stool thing, and we used to sell permits. And people used to say, oh yeah, they bought into this, they absolutely loved it. So they would come down the track with us, and they'd be standing there trying to catch these trout.
Oh, how
interesting. And sometimes they did. I mean, sometimes they managed it. Most of the time the trout are sort of standing looking at you thinking, what are you guys up to? But some people did catch them, and they were absolutely ecstatic.
You know? Oh.
Because
goodness.
It was the first time that these kids are coming from towns and cities.
Absolutely,
and things like that,
into
never
the
had
country.
A chance to
How
do such
fabulous.
A thing.
Oh, Davy,
so.
Oh, you've painted such a wonderful picture for us this afternoon. I'm full of hams and coffee and snails and tobacco and now trout in the burn and all the wonderful characters and your dear family as well. And just to think in this room of all those parties, I can just imagine the laughter and the gales of fun you all had together. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time and so much for your stories. It's been a delight to be with you and Sue this afternoon. Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
There we go.
There.